We're checking in with Josh Morgan, who's the spokesperson, communications manager for Connecticut's Department of Transportation. Welcome back to the show, Josh. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm well. How are you? Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, of course. I always love having you here. I know the roads are a very hot topic for a lot of my listeners, and mostly because it just feels like the last couple of years have been extra dangerous and extra trafficky and extra terrifying and headachey, all those really great words. And so I don't want people to think that you are the reason for any of that. But we do like hearing from the Department of Transportation, just seeing how things are being worked on and addressed in our state. So thank you for being that voice. I appreciate it.
Of course. And I like your new verbs this morning.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, they're definitely not in the dictionary. Headachey is not a word. But let's talk about, I was alerted to a recent study that came out, I think, a month or two ago, and it looked at like the top 10 most dangerous highways or most trafficky highways in the U.S. And it was interesting because the Merritt Parkway and I-95 here in Connecticut landed on the list not once but twice. Both the north and southbound sides ended up on that list. I personally, living in Connecticut, was not shocked by that, but I don't know from like a transportation point of view if you or your department, if you guys were shocked by that.
Yeah, I mean, we want to be number one. We want to be in the top 10, but for business, tourism, places to live, certainly not for traffic congestion. So when we saw that study, it was not a surprise. I think for anyone that has driven around Connecticut can understand some of the challenges with that morning and afternoon rush. Just hearing your traffic update before having me on, Merritt Parkway looked clear, but Stamford, there was some congestion right around exit 9. So the study wasn't a big surprise. Our project team, which we have a lot of work happening in the Stamford area, were aware of those rankings. And they know that with, you know, 120,000 or more vehicles traveling through 95 in Stamford every day, that there are going to be some traffic challenges. And that's what we're looking to hopefully address, as well as improve safety through the corridor.
So you actually have some public meetings next week on this, right?
Absolutely. So we have something called I-95 Stamford, i95stamford.com. It's a study that we're undertaking, planning an environmental linkage. It's called the Pell Study, where we're looking at Stamford Exit 6 to Exit 9, ways that we can improve the corridor. And this isn't just a typical study. A Pell Study involves all of the area stakeholders, so elected officials, neighborhood groups, business advocates, everyday residents who live and work and experience the highway and that corridor on a daily basis. So we actually have a couple meetings coming up next week, Tuesday the 28th at noon and Wednesday the 1st at 6:30 p.m., holding it at two different dates on two different times to try to accommodate some different work schedules. And if people can't make those meetings, they are recorded. They'll be posted on our YouTube page. But I-95Stamford.com is a great place. We're just getting started on that study.
So we're talking this morning with Josh Morgan, and pretty exciting stuff if you want to learn more. I-95Stamford.com. This is relatively new, looking at this study. And Josh, if you could just kind of reiterate, what are you hoping to get out of this? And why Stamford specifically? Why is that where the study is focused?
Yeah, I mean, several years ago, there was a I-95 West study that was conducted from the Connecticut state line up through Stamford, Norwalk, Westport. We understand the importance of the corridor, the importance of the region, and really we want to just improve safety and operations through that corridor. So we actually have a project that's probably going to be breaking ground later this summer or later this year between exit 6 and 7 in Stamford on 95. But you know, we're looking at the design of the highway. What we're hearing from people is sometimes 95 is used for local traffic because some of those exits are so close to each other. So, you know, exit 7 and 8, you can get to downtown, you can get to the transportation center. There is people that maybe are not using local roads but are just getting on and off the highway. But with some of those merges resulting in crashes, resulting in some bottlenecks, you know, we hope to address that. But, you know, what's really beautiful about a Pell study is that, you know, we're kind of starting from zero. We want to hear what the community wants, what the community's desires are, how this can impact business, tourism, how are people going to utilize this corridor in the next 10, 15, 25 years. So So, you know, these public meetings are the first step. We like to think of it as a brainstorming session. There's no bad idea. Let's throw it all on a whiteboard. Let's see what's possible. Let's see what's feasible. And we'll go from there. So, yeah, we're just getting started, and we hope people tune in and share their feedback with us.
So this is really neat. When you say a public hearing is, or a public meeting, rather, are people able to show up in person? If so, where do they go? Or would you prefer they put their comments on the i95stamford.com website?
Yeah, both of these public meetings are going to be held virtually on Zoom.
Okay.
There will be live captioning translations for Spanish and Creole to accommodate some folks who may not be a native English speaker. That's why we're going to have that on Zoom. The project materials will be posted on the website. And then if you go to i95stamford.com, you can always just send an email to the project team. You don't have to wait until the public meeting, but we definitely encourage people to tune in, listen to the presentation, and ask questions.
Okay, so simple as that. And again, i95stamford.com. So glad to have Josh Morgan here from the Department of Transportation. And Josh, thanks for taking the tough questions this morning. Really appreciate it. I know your study is focused in Stamford, but I know a lot of my listeners live in the lower New Haven County area and the upper part of Fairfield County. And it's hard to kind of overlook the fact that in the New Haven area, Bridgeport, even in the Fairfield area, we are constantly congested. Not to even mention the Sikorsky Bridge as well. It's just disastrous. And you know what I've noticed too, Josh, is it's not just in the morning and in the afternoon drive. It's like all throughout the day. I was just telling someone the other day, my son goes to school in Fairfield, but I work up in Milford. It takes me almost a half an hour, if I'm lucky, to get to him around lunchtime. That's insane to me. And I don't know where the shift started and why we have such congestion issues. Really, it feels like in the lower part of the state, not just obviously in Stamford.
Yeah, I think anyone who has been in a car over these last couple of years can sort of see that change. They've experienced that change. You know, what we saw during the COVID-19 pandemic, you know, when it first hit Connecticut in early 2020, there was a lot of work from home if you can, stay at home if you can. So there wasn't as much traffic on the roadways. The people who were out on the road having to go to work, or maybe they were just traveling, really picked up those rates of speed because they were not experiencing any congestion, any traffic volumes. Those speeds are continuing to be incredibly high. You know, we're not talking about going 70 or 75 miles an hour. You know, we're getting reports of 90, 100 miles an hour happening on our highways. So people are definitely driving dangerously, driving distracted, driving impaired. When it comes to the traffic congestion, you know, we're looking at ways to alleviate that. You know, we have a project underway on that 95 exit over by the Bridgeport Theater, 27A, which has always been a bottleneck area and sort of, you know, people trying to speed up, trying to merge in, a lot of crashes there. You know, we're trying to address these things where we can through engineering, but we're also trying to, you know, further investments in public transportation. You know, a big help would be, you know, how do we reduce the amount of single occupancy vehicles on our roadways? How do we get more people to use rail service? How do we get more people to use bus service? And that's something that we're, you know, looking to address. You know, we have a pretty substantial budget proposal from the governor that includes money to expand bus services in communities all around the state. And, you know, tying it back to COVID, people's commuting habits are changing. How often people are going to the office? Are people doing 5 days in the office anymore? Are people having half days in the office and then half days home? What are these commuting patterns? How are they changing? You know, that's all something that we're looking at as we sort of emerge from the pandemic and realize we're in a new normal.
Josh, was our congestion this bad prior to the pandemic? Does the DOT have data on that?
You know, I don't want to throw any numbers or anything out there to you, but, you know, I think anyone who has been in the state long enough knows that there's some spots that need to be addressed, and that's what we're working on. Not only to relieve traffic congestion, but a lot of times that traffic congestion is because there's a crash, is because someone's been rear-ended, or there's been something more serious there. So, you know, ultimately, we want to improve safety on our roadways, and when safety is improved, we think travel and congestion can be improved as well.
What do you think about signage concerns from people who feel like we don't have enough signage about speed limits and where it's appropriate to slow down or speed up or whatever the case may be, merging? Like, do you think we lack signage in Connecticut? How do you feel we're doing in that department?
Yeah, we're good on signage. The amount of signs we have, you know, we're following the federal regulations. This isn't something that state just dictates or the Connecticut DOT dictates. You know, there's a federal guidelines for the types of signs, the colors of signs, the reflectivity on those signs to make them more visible at night. You know, we do have projects happening around the state to replace signs that have reached their end of their useful life to try to bring them up to those current standards to make them more visible. But that's something that, you know, if there are areas that folks maybe have a concern or want to see additional signage, you know, we definitely encourage them to reach out to their local municipality, their local traffic authority, or they can contact the Department of Transportation Customer Care Center.
I have another question. We're talking to Josh Morgan of the DOT. What does the DOT think about retesting drivers in order to keep their licenses? You know, it doesn't have to be every 5 years, but maybe every 10 years or every time you have to renew your license, you take a refresher course, because some of the things you're talking about is driver behavior. And maybe if people were more at risk of losing their license, they would remember that driving is a privilege and not just this right that you have to just drive erratically and speed and just do what you're already doing on the roads, which is putting people at danger.
Yeah, absolutely. So there was something called the Vision Zero Council, which was created out of an act of the legislature in 2021. So this cross-functional group, which was chaired by our then deputy commissioner, now current commissioner, Garrett Ucolito, they looked at four different areas, enforcement, engineering, equity, and also education. So the Vision Zero Council actually submitted some legislative ideas, some proposals. Those are continuing to be discussed. And one of that is driver retraining, driver education. Someone gets their license at 17, 18, you know, even if 25 years old, then we don't retest them again. So looking at ways, you know, maybe if someone gets a ticket for distracted driving because they were texting and driving or not using a hands-free device, you know, maybe as part of that ticket, they're required to take a short class to explain to them and really reinforce the dangerous behavior that they were doing. How do we connect with students to help explain the importance of roadway safety, the importance of pedestrian safety. And with, you know, there's new laws, new infrastructure, things are changing. You know, how can we work with the DMV to maybe be a touch point when people need to renew their license, when they need to register a vehicle, get a new license plate, you know, trying to find these ways where we can share this information, share updates, and really be connected to the community. Because you're right, you know, we issue a license and then there's that's pretty much yours forever as long as you're renewing it, you know, every several years. So that's definitely something the council looked at, the education committee of the council. And I know I've been plugging meetings this morning, so we actually have another Vision Zero meeting. Our first one of 2023 is coming up on March 7th, and that one will be held on Zoom as well.
I'd love to know what happens after that meeting, so we should connect after that just to see if you could come back on if there's any, you know, new prevalent information. And last thing, Josh, before I let you go, state police. You know, we always hear about the shortage of state police that we've been dealing with for the last couple of years and how that could have a direct impact on people speeding and being erratic drivers as well. What does the DOT say about it? I know the governor's made a real issue of making sure we bolster up our numbers, but do you think that will have a direct impact on making driver behaviors better in the state if we get those numbers back up to a healthy place?
Yeah, I think enforcement is important. People need to know that they could be issued a fine, an infraction for speeding, driving impaired. But it's important to also, you know, in the message that we're trying to get out there also, is that outside of a fine, outside of a ticket, you could kill yourself. You could kill somebody else. You could really hurt people. Driving is such a serious and enormous responsibility that we need people to take that safely and understand that when they're driving 100 miles an hour, when they're driving drunk, when they're streaming YouTube videos while they should be focused on the road, they're really putting themselves and other people at risk. So we actually have a proposal working with our legislative partners, working in concert with Connecticut State Police about ways to look at automatic enforcement. ways to expand enforcement to try to protect pedestrians, try to make school and work zones safer. So right now, you know, there are no red light cameras in Connecticut. There are no automatic speed enforcement measures in Connecticut. So we do have a proposal there to expand that into pedestrian and school safety zones to try to follow suit, which, you know, more than a dozen other states have already implemented with positive results showing that this automatic enforcement has reduced the rates of speeding, has reduced the rates of crashes, and has really, most importantly, reduced the fatal and serious injury crashes.
Josh Morgan, unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I look forward to hopefully having you back on really soon. As I mentioned, this is probably one of the bigger topics that my audience really wants to continue talking about. So I thank you for coming on and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Absolutely, Melissa. My pleasure. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. I don't even know how to introduce this next guest. It's taken me like 2 weeks just to get the courage to be like, all right, having Brian Blackmore on the show. For anyone who's not familiar, Brian Blackmore, I bet you you're familiar with his artwork. I got to meet Brian a couple weeks back in Epcot, visiting my brother in Disney. And Brian is behind a lot of incredible artwork. I'm almost positive you have seen or you've come across or maybe you've witnessed in person when you visited any of the parks or the property owned by Disney. So I got to talking with Brian a little bit and we stayed connected and he agreed to come on the show. Thanks to Disney for giving him the clearance. And I don't know what I guess according to your bio here, Brian, you are a character art manager. So I'm going to call you that. But Brian, welcome to the show. Good morning. Also a New Englander, might I add. So glad to have you on WICC. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Melissa. Yes, I am originally from Massachusetts. Joined the military back in 78, and I still have family in that area.
It's amazing, and thank you for your service. I always think that's incredible. The other day we were talking to firefighters. He's like, oh, yeah, I worked as a firefighter. I'm like, what didn't you do, Brian? What seriously did you not do? It's amazing.
When you have lived as long as I have, you get an opportunity to do a lot of things.
Well, I think you are just amazing, and I've told my audience about you because they all know what a Disney nut I am, but it's amazing, Brian, because as I started to talk about your resume, all of a sudden you also have a lot of fans in my listener base, so I was excited to have you on the show. Talk to us, first of all, your journey from Massachusetts and making your way into working with the Walt Disney Company.
Wow. Well, a lot of people say it's like a comedy of errors. I wanted to always work for Disney. I think it was at age 5 that I decided I wanted to work for them. And I ended up joining the military and ended up in South Dakota and Germany and then eventually in Texas. And this company that I was working for, this warehouse, it was through that warehouse that I got my opportunity to get on with Disney. It was really strange.
So strange. Like how? It's amazing.
Well, it was through this corporate magazine that was at this particular company they worked for. It's a worldwide distributor of hospital supplies. And they said, we'd like to do an interview with you in this magazine, this corporate magazine that only went to distribution centers throughout the country.
Wow.
And I mentioned about how I wanted to work at Disney, and I was working on some other projects outside of my normal job, which was driving forklifts and unloading and loading trucks. And about a couple of weeks after the article came out, I got this letter from Disney saying, hey, I have this article from Brian Blackmore mentions he wants to work at Disney. Maybe we'd like to give him an opportunity to show some of his work. And there was a card in there about this one person, and I called him, and I said, well, how did you get this article? It's only in corporate magazines, corporate distribution centers. And he said, well, there was this Glendale police officer that knew someone at one of the local distribution centers that handed it off to me, and then I read the article, and then the rest is history.
That's crazy.
So they said there was an opening in Florida, and I submitted my work, and within, I guess, a couple of weeks or so, I was on as a freelancer working from Texas, and I did that for 4 years, and then in 94, they brought me in full-time.
So you've been with the company now for over 20 years, and why don't you share some of your standout work? Because I think that's what made my brother collapse to the ground when he found out what you have done. It's really quite unbelievable. And I think a lot of people are probably very familiar with your artwork, but didn't know the guy behind it.
Well, working as theme park artist, which I've been doing now for 29 years. Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
I don't know where the time has gone. The department that I work with in that entire time, we work on all the merchandise for all the parks, as well as Disneyland, and we'll occasionally work with Hong Kong and Shanghai, and even our colleagues in Disneyland Paris, or Euro Disney, or Disneyland Paris. So I've had the opportunity to work on hundreds, if not thousands, of different merchandise items that you'll see in the parks. And that can range from something as simple as a coffee cup design to a T-shirt to the figurines that you see and the pins. I mean, it just covers the full gamut of merchandise items at the parks. So you said, or you'd asked, what were some of the ones that...
Yeah, you're being modest right now, Brian. You're being very modest. Like the cups, the pins, yes, that's all good. But what are some of your big projects? I mean,
I did have an opportunity to work on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day balloon. That was back in 2009. And that was a wonderful experience. I got to actually fly up to their corporate headquarters, Macy's, and review the balloon, segments of making the balloon. And then I actually got to see the final balloon in its full glory at a secret location. And they had asked me if I wanted to walk the balloon, and I said, I can't, but my brother and his wife, they ended up walking the balloon in New York on Macy's on Thanksgiving Day, and it was just a thrilling experience for them. Some of the other things were, I would say, there's the beverage cart or some of the golf carts here on Disney property at the golf courses, the Mickey that's on there, that's my Mickey. The Magical Express bus, the Mickey that you see on the bus, that's mine as well. But I think one of the other things that I really enjoyed working on was the Jedi Mickey big figurine with the lightsaber that lights up. That was done for Star Wars Weekends about 15 years ago. So, and we no longer mash up our characters with Star Wars, but at that time we could, and it was just thrilling for me. I enjoy drawing the Disney characters, and my specialty is drawing the Fab Five, which is Mickey, Donald, Goofy, Pluto, and Minnie. With occasionally, I'll have the opportunity to draw other characters as well, but for the most part, that's what my expertise is, that area of expertise, and my favorite character is Donald Duck.
Oh, is it? No way. I should have had you draw Donald. My older brother is obsessed with Donald Duck. I should have had you draw that.
Well, maybe the next time you come down, I'll go ahead and I'll do that for him.
Ah, you're the best. Brian Blackmore is here this morning. And if you have literally gone to any of the Disney parks, maybe you've even gotten on the cruise ships, because that's another thing, Brian, was that you did some of the artwork on the front of the Disney Cruise Line ships, which is beautiful. You are probably very familiar with Brian's work, but you didn't realize it was Brian who was creating these arts of magic. So we are kind of diving into Brian's journey to Disney and just getting to know a fascinating person who, again, you know, started right here in New England, just next door to us in Massachusetts, and has made quite the incredible career for himself. So we're chatting with Brian Blackmore this morning, an incredible artist that has been working with the Walt Disney Company for almost 30 years, Brian. I mean, I know you can't believe it. Obviously, time flies when you're having fun and hanging out with Mickey. But what is that like, you know, when you were growing up in Massachusetts? First of all, when did you discover your gift of being an artist?
Well, I guess it was age 5. That's when I decided that I wanted to be a Disney artist. The Wonderful World of Color was on TV at that time. And yes, Walt was alive at that time. And so every Sunday was kind of like a staple for our family to sit down and watch The Wonderful World of Color. And, of course, the Donald Duck cartoons were always my favorite. And I think that's when I decided. And I said to my mom and dad, that's what I want to be.
That's so cool. So you knew you wanted to do something with Disney, but you knew even at that age that you had a talent with art. Like, did you grow up sketching or coloring, or did something stand out? I mean, because whether you say it or not, I could tell our audience you're a fantastic artist. I mean, it's really pretty quite incredible. So how did you know that this was your gift?
I guess it would be like any other person who has a love for something, whether it's music or acting or accounting. You develop a love for it, and because you have that love or interest in it, then you continuously practice it. And the winters of Massachusetts obviously encouraged me to draw a lot, because there were some things that, of course, during the wintertime, you can't always go outside. So you sit and you draw, or you read, or you do whatever you need to do.
And you know what's amazing about Brian, too, is it's not just his art that looks like it's straight from one of the Walt Disney World animators. You also do the signatures of the characters as well, I noticed. Even your own signature kind of looks like a Walt Disney signature. It's pretty incredible. Well, so your handwriting, too, is great.
Well, a lot of people have noticed that. And yes, in the early part of my career, when in our department people needed some kind of Disney flair, or the font, as we call it, the Disney font, they would come to me. Of course, now we have, through the advent of computers and everything else, we have developed a computer program that has the Disney font in it. So unfortunately, that was phased out for me.
That's okay. That's fair. I mean, because look at your, what does today look like? 29 years later, what does today Brian Blackmore's art journey with Disney look like? I mean, how long will you continue on this, and what does sort of the day-to-day or week-to-week look like for you with Disney?
Well, interestingly enough, next year on this very day will be my retirement day. I'm going to be hanging up and allowing the younger people to take over, because I'm literally the oldest person in the office. And when I joined, I was one of the younger ones back in 94. We had only 10 people in our department. And now it's roughly 40 to 50 people. When I first joined the company, we didn't have computers. And we did everything the contemporary way, drawing on paper. Now it's reached a point where everybody in the office has a computer. And mostly everything is done not on paper anymore, but rather in the computer.
That's a huge shift. What was that like to watch that shift from everything? Because I'll watch those documentaries, and I know some of my listeners do as well, from how we used to make movies and what they have become today. It's quite an extraordinary process. And you got to kind of watch it from right there, front row seats.
Well, that's very true. When I first joined the company, as I said, in 94, Lion King was the big film at that point. And now when you take a look at where we are in terms of computer animation, it's an incredible step in technology. And in many ways, it's even better. The computer allows you to do more than what you could do with paper and pencil. The challenges, of course, definitely with both programs are the same in trying to bring life into whatever you're drawing. I look at it this way. The computer is a tool, just like a pencil. The person that's operating that tool, whether it be the computer or the pencil, is the one that's bringing the life into the characters. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, I think it does. And I love, gosh, is there anything artistic you don't do? So you're a poet as well. Okay. It does make sense. I just think you have such a knack, and you are exactly where you were supposed to be, Brian, which must feel so great to know that you ended up on the path, whether it was a bunch of issues or random things that happened in life, you ended up where you were meant to be, which is really, really incredible. I don't know how many people can say at 5 years old their dreams came true and the way that yours did. So what would you say to the listener this morning thinking, I'm too old, or things are too different, or my time has passed, or there's no way this could ever amount to what I'd like it to? What would you say to change their minds?
Wow, you have some tough questions.
It's funny you say that, but go for it.
I would say if you have a heart for doing something, and it doesn't matter how old or young you are, you should always continue with it. Don't allow your dreams to pass you by. There's a variety of ways to move forward with anything that you're dreaming about. I think the internet is one of the things that has certainly made opportunities greater than in the older days. Mm-hmm. When I was trying to get on with Disney, I was always sending in my portfolio. And nowadays, with the internet and having your own web page, it's easier to contact. You don't have to have a physical portfolio anymore. Everything's all done digitally. So when I was reviewing portfolios myself back over 20 years ago, we would get roughly 200 portfolios a month or more, people, and we would go and review the portfolios. Now people just merely can send us something through the internet, and we can look at their portfolios that way. So again, it falls back to, I think, technology. Technology has made it opportunities better for people. Does that make sense?
It does. It really does. And I think it's. I just find you to be such an inspiration. I know it makes you uncomfortable when I say that, but I just think it's just amazing to hear your story and to be able to inspire so many others. And I also know Brian. I hope I don't embarrass you, but today is Brian's birthday. So the fact that he wanted to get up early and celebrate it here with us, happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you.
So glad we could celebrate with you. And I will say, Brian, not that any of my bosses are, I'm sure, are going to want to hear this, but if you ever find out from any of your Disney friends down there that they're looking for either a journalist, reporter, communication, anything that you think I can remotely do, you just let me know. You just give me a call.
You bet I will, Melissa. You bet I will.
Brian, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you and share your story on my show, and I'm so glad to finally be connected to you. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa, and you have a great day. Stay warm.
Oh, thank you. I know, right? You're very lucky down there in Florida. Not quite as cold as it is up here right now. Enjoy the sunshine. You deserve it, friend. Brian Blackmore here on WICC. I don't even know how to introduce this next guest. It's taken me like 2 weeks just to get the courage to be like, all right, having Brian Blackmore on the show. For anyone who's not familiar, Brian Blackmore, I bet you're familiar with his artwork. I got to meet Brian a couple weeks back in Epcot, visiting my brother in Disney. And Brian is behind a lot of incredible artwork I'm almost positive you have seen or you've come across or maybe you've witnessed in person when you visited any of the parks or the property owned by Disney. So I got to talking with Brian a little bit and we stayed connected and he agreed to come on the show. Thanks to Disney for giving him the clearance. And I don't know what I guess according to your bio here, Brian, you are a character art manager. So I'm going to call you that. But Brian, welcome to the show. Good morning. Also a New Englander, might I add. So glad to have you on WICC. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Melissa. Yes, I am originally from Massachusetts. Joined the military back in 78, and I still have family in that area.
It's amazing, and thank you for your service. I always think it's incredible. The other day we were talking to firefighters. He's like, oh, yeah, I worked as a firefighter. I'm like, what didn't you do, Brian? What seriously did you not do? It's amazing.
When you have lived as long as I have, you get an opportunity to do a lot of things.
Well, I think you are just amazing, and I've told my audience about you because they all know what a Disney nut I am, but it's amazing, Brian, because as I started to talk about your resume, all of a sudden you also have a lot of fans in my listener base, so I was excited to have you on the show. Talk to us, first of all, your journey from Massachusetts and making your way into working with the Walt Disney Company.
Wow. Well, it's a lot of people say it's like a comedy of errors. I wanted to always work for Disney. I think it was at age five that I decided I wanted to work for them. And I ended up joining the military and ended up in South Dakota and Germany and then eventually in Texas. And this company that I was working for, this warehouse, it was through that warehouse that I got my opportunity to get on with Disney. It was really strange.
So strange. Like how? It's amazing.
Well, it was through this corporate magazine that was at this particular company they worked for. It's a worldwide distributor of hospital supplies. And they said, we'd like to do an interview with you in this magazine, this corporate magazine that only went to distribution centers throughout the country.
Wow.
And I mentioned about how I wanted to work at Disney, and I was working on some other projects outside of my normal job, which was driving forklifts and unloading trucks. And about a couple of weeks after the article came out, I got this letter from Disney saying, hey, I have this article from Brian Blackmore mentions he wants to work at Disney. Maybe we'd like to give him an opportunity to show some of his work. And there was a card in there about this one person, and I called him, and I said, well, how did you get this article? It's only in corporate magazines, corporate distribution centers. And he said, well, there was this Glendale police officer that knew someone at one of the local distribution centers that handed it off to me. And then I read the article, and then the rest is history.
That's crazy.
So they said there was an opening in Florida, and I submitted my work. And within, a couple of weeks or so, I was on as a freelancer working from Texas. And I did that for 4 years. And then in 94, they brought me in full time.
So you've been with the company now for over 20 years, and what? Why don't you share some of your standout work? Because I think that's what made my brother collapse to the ground when he found out what you have done. It's really quite unbelievable, and I think a lot of people are probably very familiar with your artwork but didn't know the guy behind it.
Well, working as a theme park artist, which I've been doing now for 29 years. Can you believe that?
That's amazing.
I don't know where the time has gone. The department that I work with, in that entire time, we work on all the merchandise for all the parks, as well as Disneyland, and we'll occasionally work with Hong Kong and Shanghai, and even our colleagues in Disneyland Paris, or Euro Disney, or Disneyland Paris. So I've had the opportunity to work on hundreds, if not thousands, of different merchandise items that you'll see in the parks. And that can range from something as simple as a coffee cup design to a T-shirt to the figurines that you see and the pins. I mean, it just covers the full gamut of merchandise items at the parks. So you said, or you'd asked, what were some of the ones that...
Yeah, you're being modest right now, Brian. You're being very modest. Like the cups, the pins, yes, that's all good. But what are some of your big projects? I mean...
Did have an opportunity to work on the Macy's Thanksgiving Day balloon. That was back in 2009. And that was a wonderful experience. I got to actually fly up to their corporate headquarters, Macy's, and review the balloon, or at least the early segments of making the balloon. And then I actually got to see the final balloon in its full glory at a secret location. And they had asked me if I wanted to walk the balloon, and I said, I can't, but my brother and his wife, they ended up walking the balloon in New York on Macy's on Thanksgiving Day, and it was just a thrilling experience for them. Some of the other things were, I would say, there's the beverage cart or some of the golf carts here on Disney property at the golf courses, the Mickey that's on there, that's my Mickey. The Magical Express bus, the Mickey that you see on the bus, that's mine as well. But I think one of the other things that I really enjoyed working on was the Jedi Mickey big figurine with the lightsaber that lights up. That was done for Star Wars Weekends about 15 years ago. So, and we no longer mash up our characters with Star Wars, but at that time we could, and it was just thrilling for me. I enjoy drawing the Disney characters, and my specialty is drawing the Fab Five, which is Mickey, Donald, Goofy, Pluto, and Minnie. With occasionally, I'll have the opportunity to draw other characters as well, but for the most part, that's what my expertise is, that area of expertise, and my favorite character is Donald Duck.
Oh, is it? No way. I should have had you draw Donald. My older brother is obsessed with Donald Duck. I should have had you draw that.
Well, maybe the next time you come down, I'll go ahead and I'll do that for him.
Ah, you're the best. Brian Blackmore is here this morning. And if you have literally gone to any of the Disney parks, maybe you've even gotten on the cruise ships, because that's another thing, Brian, was that you did some of the artwork on the front of the Disney Cruise Line ships, which is beautiful. You are probably very familiar with Brian's work, but you didn't realize it was Brian who was creating these arts of magic. So we are kind of diving into Brian's journey to Disney and just getting to know a fascinating person who, again, you know, started right here in New England, just next door to us in Massachusetts, and has made quite the incredible career for himself. So we're chatting with Brian Blackmore this morning, an incredible artist that has been working with the Walt Disney Company for almost 30 years, Brian. I mean, I know you can't believe it. Obviously, time flies when you're having fun and hanging out with Mickey. But what is that like, you know, when you were growing up in Massachusetts? First of all, when did you discover your gift of being an artist?
Well, I guess it was age five. That's when I decided that I wanted to be a Disney artist. The Wonderful World of Color was on TV at that time. And yes, Walt was alive at that time. And so every Sunday was kind of like a staple for our family to sit down and watch The Wonderful World of Color. And, of course, the Donald Duck cartoons were always my favorite. And I think that's when I decided. And I said to my mom, Dad, that's what I want to be.
That's so cool. So you knew you wanted to do something with Disney, but you knew even at that age that you had a talent with art. Like, did you grow up sketching or coloring, or did something stand out? I mean, because whether you say it or not, I could tell our audience you're a fantastic artist. I mean, it's really pretty quite incredible. So how did you know that this was your gift?
I guess it would be like any other person who has a love for something, whether it's music or acting or accounting. You develop a love for it, and because you have that love or interest in it, then you continuously practice it. And the winters of Massachusetts obviously encouraged me to draw a lot, because there were some things that, of course, during the wintertime, you can't always go outside. So you sit and you draw, or you read, or you do whatever you need to do.
And you know what's amazing about Brian, too, is it's not just his art that looks like it's straight from one of the Walt Disney World animators. You also do the signatures of the characters as well, I noticed. Even your own signature kind of looks like a Walt Disney signature. It's pretty incredible.
Well,
so your handwriting, too, is great.
A lot of people have noticed that. And yes, in the early part of my career, when in our department people needed some kind of Disney flair, or the font, as we call it, the Disney font, they would come to me. Of course, now we have, through the advent of computers and everything else, we have developed a computer program that has the Disney font in it. So unfortunately, that was phased out for me.
That's okay. That's fair. I mean, because look at your, what does today look like? 29 years later, what does today Brian Blackmore's art journey with Disney look like? I mean, how long will you continue on this, and what does sort of the day-to-day or week-to-week look like for you with Disney?
Well, interestingly enough, next year on this very day will be my retirement day. I'm going to be hanging up and allowing the younger people to take over, because I'm literally the oldest person in the office. And when I joined, I was one of the younger ones back in 94. We had only 10 people in our department. And now it's roughly 40 to 50 people. When I first joined the company, we didn't have computers. And we did everything the contemporary way, drawing on paper. Now it's reached a point where everybody in the office has a computer. And mostly everything is done not on paper anymore, but rather in the computer.
That's a huge shift. What was that like to watch that shift from everything? Because I'll watch those documentaries, and I know some of my listeners do as well, from how we used to make movies and what they have become today. It's quite an extraordinary process. And you got to kind of watch it from right there, front row seats.
Well, that's very true. When I first joined the company, as I said, in 94, Lion King was the big film at that point. And now when you take a look at where we are in terms of computer animation, it's an incredible step in technology. And in many ways, it's even better. The computer allows you to do more than what you could do with paper and pencil. The challenges, of course, definitely with both programs are the same in trying to bring life into whatever you're drawing. I look at it this way. The computer is a tool, just like a pencil. the person that's operating that tool, whether it be the computer or the pencil, is the one that's bringing the life into the characters. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Yeah, I think it doesn't. I love, gosh, is there anything artistic you don't do? So you're a poet as well. Okay. It does make sense. I just think you have such a knack and you are exactly where you were supposed to be, Brian, which must feel so great to know that you ended up on the path, whether it was a bunch of issues or random things that happened in life. You ended up where you were meant to be, which is really, really incredible. I don't know how many people can say at 5 years old their dreams came true and the way that yours did. So what would you say to the listener this morning thinking I'm too old or things are too different or my time has passed or there's no way this could ever amount to what I'd like it to? What would you say to change their minds?
Wow, you have some tough questions.
It's funny you say that, but go for it.
I would say if you have a heart for doing something, and it doesn't matter how old or young you are, you should always continue with it. Don't allow your dreams to pass you by. There's a variety of ways to move forward with anything that you're dreaming about. I think the internet is one of the things that has certainly made opportunities greater than in the older days. Mm-hmm. When I was trying to get on with Disney, I was always sending in my portfolio. And nowadays, with the internet and having your web page, it's easier to contact. You don't have to have a physical portfolio anymore. Everything's all done digitally. So when I was reviewing portfolios myself back over 20 years ago, we would get roughly 200 portfolios a month or more, people, and we would go and review the portfolios. Now people just merely can send us something through the internet, and we can look at their portfolios that way. So again, it falls back to, I think, technology. Technology has made it the opportunities better for people. Does that make sense?
It does. It really does. And I think it's. I just find you to be such an inspiration. I know it makes you uncomfortable when I say that, but I just think it's just amazing to hear your story and to be able to inspire so many others. And I also know Brian. I hope I don't embarrass you, but today is Brian's birthday. So the fact that he wanted to get up early and celebrate it here with us, happy birthday, my friend.
Thank you.
So glad we could celebrate with you. And I will say, Brian, not that any of my bosses are, I'm sure, are going to want to hear this, but if you ever find out from any of your Disney friends down there that they're looking for either a journalist, reporter, communication, anything that you think I can remotely do, you just let me know. You just give me a call.
You bet I will, Melissa. You bet I will.
Brian, it has been such a pleasure to talk to you and share your story on my show, and I'm so glad to finally be connected to you. Thank you so much for coming on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Melissa, and you have a great day. Stay warm.
Oh, thank you. I know, right? You're very lucky down there in Florida. Not quite as cold as it is up here right now. Enjoy the sunshine. You deserve it, friend. Brian Blackmore here on WICC.